Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Lab. I'm joined by Dan from HLTCO once again. This is our, I'd say neutral fan, because you're very balanced in the way that you view football. And we've done a previous podcast with you on the Lab. Actually, our most downloaded and listened to episode since starting in January. So
that is a feather in my cap.
Yeah, I hope you tweet about it. Yes, how are you? Because the last time we spoke, Glasner had just, I think, been appointed, and there was a buzz of excitement around Crystal Palace and the fact that they've managed to get this much sought after off the manager before, after he left, was it Frankfurt? I think it was. So, and part of the reason why I wanted to bring you on again, Dan, is because Spurs have gone through this cycle of having being really excited about a manager to suddenly questions being asked. That's not to say there is a groundswell of anti-Ange Postecoglou movement, but there are being questions asked. And I'm just curious, from a neutral fan or an outside perspective, what you think is going on at Spurs and the kind of job or the quality of the job that Postecoglou has done so far. But before we do that, you must be ecstatic with Glasner and what Palace are doing currently, right?
I mean, I am 35 years old. I've been going to Palace 25 years, season ticket, you know, not necessarily home and away every week for the last four or five, because my little boy is 5 years old and that's taken precedence. But I can honestly say to you, no hyperbole whatsoever, I have never felt this happy about Crystal Palace Football Club in my life.
In your life?
It's not even, never, mate, never.
Not because, even when Hopkins looked to
no, go. No, I'll tell you why, right? Because if you look at Palace, and it shouldn't be a case of comparison being the FIFA joy, etc., but as a London-based Premier League club, even when we've won promotion, right, you know that you're going into the lion's den. You know, you're coming up against top sides week after week, and we've been here a decade now, plus, you know, winning promotion in 2013. But it's always a struggle. You're always trying to push water up a hill, you know, and that in itself is fine, because it's our natural place within the footballing hierarchy. But when you get a situation like we had towards the end of Roy Hodgson's second spell, where people from outside the Palace bubble are saying to you, well, what do you expect? You're Crystal Palace. You know, what can you possibly expect more than finishing 12th every year and more than just treading water? That is your level. You get a manager like Oliver Glasner come in, and it's not just the results, it's the entire mentality that he has brought with him. You know, I said it to somebody the other day. We were playing Luton Town. We were 1-0 up. It's the 96th minute. and we got two or three corners in added time, and we put them into the box to try and score a second. With the last kick of the game, Luton equalised, we dropped 2 points, and everyone's starting to question immediately whether or not it was naivety. And, you know, I count myself amongst that number. But at the same time, Oliver Glasner's whole approach is trying to raise the bar of expectation for Crystal Palace. So we went into a game against Manchester City, we scored after a couple of minutes. We let in a few, we scored again. We went to Anfield straight after that. We went there with a desire to win the game. We kept a clean sheet. We did that. We then played West Ham at home. We scored 4 in the first 31 minutes. We've won that game 5-2. We went into a game against Newcastle, a team that had had a prolonged period off, pushing for European football in good form. We're on 3 or 4 days of rest, and we absolutely scored them. You know, it's not a case of our Palace, you know, we sort of battled our way through. We were comfortably the better side. There is no question about it. And then, you know, you go into a game against Fulham last weekend. For the first 30 minutes, we were playing with them. We just had them on the end of a string. I think ultimately we ended up conceding in the second half because fatigue got the better of us. But the reason I'm so infused at the moment is that there is a genuine framework there, a genuine belief. The fitness levels are up. The players are completely bought into it. And we're going into every game, not just hoping to get points, but knowing that there's a style of play that's high press, high energy, looking to be on the front foot. And it's just completely at odds with anything that we've seen from Crystal Palace in the Premier League ever since we were promoted in 2013. So from my perspective, you know, we're going into a summer. We've not even had a transfer window with Oliver Glasner yet. He's technically doing this with players who are on his own, albeit some very, very talented ones. If we start putting round pegs in round holes, I'm not suggesting that we're going to go and conquer all, but the general feel of the club is just as good as I've ever known it.
Yeah, Dan, look, that, I mean, 100%, you can see that. And you can see that in results. And you're going into a game against Manchester United, and I think you're, without saying it out loud, probably expecting to win that game now, which is a massive turnaround from where you were previously. And there, as you were speaking there, I was thinking about the parallels between Palace and Tottenham, and why you said that we are in different places in our standing in the football table or the football pyramid or the structure of football. Tottenham are, because of, you know, the amount of money that's been able to be created through the running of the football club and what Daniel Levy's done and all the things and being a part of the big four, big five, that we're in a different position. But you know, you said about pushing water uphill when your Palace coming into the Premier League. There is a mini league at the top that Spurs are a part of, but always bottom of. And and the perception of Tottenham Hotspur is that we'll never get there. There will never be a world where Tottenham end up as champions of the Premier League, because it's never happened. And before the Premier League was founded, it was, you know, whatever it was, 30 years before that. So Yeah, there are parallels, and I can hear it. And I just, the excitement, the other parallel is that we've both had a manager that's made us feel super excited at the start of their career at the respective football clubs. What we've got at the moment at Spurs is after, you know, the honeymoon period of him coming in and being top of the league and being super excited. And even when we recorded, I think we recorded in January, it might have been February, there was still an element of, you know, unbridled excitement about what Postecoglou was going to bring to Spurs. And that has dissipated somewhat. Just to caveat that to people that are listening, and there'll be many, many that are saying, well, I don't have an issue with Postecoglou. I'm not, I understand that. And the vast majority of the people, based on the poll that we did who on our Patreon, who are people that are probably more in line with the kind of way we talk about Tottenham on the Fighting Cock, which is, you know, very positive and looking towards the good that's happening rather than concentrating on the bad. There was a poll that we put out, and it was 95% wanted, who thought that Ange Postecoglou was the right man for Spurs, and 5% that said he wasn't, which is probably about as popular as you can be in a football club. What do you think is happening at Tottenham currently?
I mean, it's obviously a multifaceted conversation. I do think that there is always going to be a levelling off. You know, you're not going to get a manager come in, sweep all aside. And I mean, if you go back to the very start of this season, I mean, I said it on my own Twitter page. I think you beat Man United first home game of the season, or the second.
2-1, I think.
And I said, on Twitter, am I off my head for thinking there's a chance that Spurs might get top four? And the amount of replies that said to me, no Harry Kane, they've got absolutely no chance. Now, obviously, you would expect Aston Villa to go on and secure fourth place now, given the way the table is. But not trying to, you know, tell people how to think. But I do feel that football fandom is very live and die with each week's results. And, you know, you can look at the defensive frailties, the fact that Spurs have looked a bit soft at the back at times under Postecoglou, the drop-off in form in recent weeks, the defeat to Arsenal, and it all becomes a bit of a storm in a teacup. Whereas if you look at the overall structure of the side, the fact that he's brought back a degree of excitement, the fact that you can score goals, the fact that he's managed to do this with the loss of Harry Kane, who's been such a huge figure in Tottenham's recent history. And all of that, for me, speaks to a progress that is overall rather than the right now. You know, I get that people are feeling a little bit unsure about whether or not the long-term prospects are there and whether or not his style of football has been figured out. But you still have to look at the expectations for Spurs before a ball was kicked this season and say that he has at least met them, if not gone a little bit above. And even though you are going to have teething problems, that's the same with every single club you look at in the entire pyramid. And sometimes you can get a bit bogged down in the weeds rather than trying to take a step back and just look at the bigger picture. But I appreciate I'm coming at that from a detached point of view rather than someone that's living and dying with your results game on game.
Well, that's why your take is interesting, because you don't really care what happens to Tottenham or how well we do. It's not, you're not saying this from a perspective of trying to please Spurs fans. You're coming to it as from a perspective of having a measured judge on what's happening to a football club that you're not emotionally attached to, which is why it's interesting. But you mentioned about being found out there. That is a conversation that's being had around Postecoglou, that in the first 10 games of the season, we won 10, drew 8, we're top of the league. And then clubs started to sort of suss us out somewhat. Certainly the clubs down the bottom half of the table would sit back, low block, make us do all the work with the ball, and try and find a way through this defence. And if they get the opportunity to take the ball from us, that they will break at pace. And there's so many good teams at doing that in the Premier League. There does seem to be this there's either two ways of playing. Either you're possession based, looking to control, create opportunity through your own industry, or you're the opposite, which is, there's three actually. There's one that has that kind of mid press that kind of Newcastle like to play and Villa play. And then there's the others that really sit back and just use the pace and counter attacking abilities of their forwards to hurt you. And it seems like we've been undone by that many times this season. Do you think there is an element of Ange Postecoglou being found out? Or is it just about clubs reacting to the strengths that we exhibited in that first 10 games?
I think it's an interesting conversation, because if you listen to the way that Ange Postecoglou thinks about the game, whenever he speaks about his style, you know, he says he won't change. And you could argue that stubbornness, and it's foolish to do that because it's such a tactically nuanced situation in the Premier League from week to week. But his overriding view on it is that if he abandons those core principles that he has always had, that have served him well throughout numerous different jobs, different clubs, national level, then his gravitas within the club structure with the players and the board will dissipate, because, you know, one minute you're coming in saying, this is the way I do it, this is my DNA, and this is how we're going to do it forever. And then because your form has a bit of a wobble, you change that, and the level of trust that the players would have in him would go, as far as he's concerned. I mean, it's a difficult conversation. I don't know enough about his situation in the J-League and the clubs that were around him. Obviously, Celtic and Rangers are the behemoths of Scottish football, so you are starting with something of a positive there if you go into a club like Celtic, because of the budgets and everything else that you have in your favour. I think Spurs are an interesting concept because, I mean, we've mentioned it already this morning. You know, you look at that mini-league at the top, you aren't going to be able to spend the same as Manchester United or Manchester City. You have to be a bit more frugal with your transfer policy and the way you have to go about building your squad. But I do think that if you're going to establish a way of playing, it's better to have one that does have excitement, does have the home crowd getting up, does have two or three four-goal wins at home every season, has the ability to score goals from behind. Of course, everyone wants to be stable at the back, But if you go too far the other way, you end up in a stale situation where you don't feel like you can score goals at all. And, you know, spreading the goals around the side is something I think you've been relatively good at this season. I do, from an outsider's point of view, I look at your away form and I think it's a little bit of a worry, because there is that sort of unique factor of your fans in the stadium. The last 20 minutes, you come on strong and you can sort of have a tidal wave. It happened to Palace. You know, we took the lead, albeit against the run of play, and then all of a sudden, you know, the click of the fingers and we're behind. But I think once that sort of enthusiasm drifts, as it has in recent weeks, the fans in the stadium don't necessarily expect it, and then that can be a bit of a runaway train of negative emotion rather than the way it was in the first half of the season where everything was coming up roses.
Yeah, no, you're right. What did you make of Ange's high line and his style of play typically? I know you mentioned about, you know, the benefits of you know, keeping possession and trying to score, and being open is a part of it. But do you think that Tottenham look vulnerable?
I think what you said about, you know, the counter-attacking of sides in the Premier League being lethal is a valid point of view. You know, I remember back when we first won promotion, albeit it was 11 years ago now, the drop-off in terms of quality of attacking play in the Championship, I'm not saying it's the same because obviously 10 years has passed, but you come into the Premier League and you realise that top sides only need one or two chances to punish you. And unfortunately for Spurs, you know, that high line, the high energy, the pushing men forward, it can lead to a situation where, you know, sides will know that's coming. I think Wolves did it to perfection, really, in their game against you in North London. But at the same time, you know, again, if he went to try and alter it completely and sit back and try and soak up pressure against teams that are doing it to you, then I think you roll dice and you risk having a situation where everything that makes Ange Postecoglou's football so engrossing and so, you know, attractive to supporters, particularly in the first 3 or 4 months of his time with you, I think everyone from a Spurs point of view couldn't believe their luck. So, you know, it's not a case of being careful what you wish for. I just think if you're going to tamper with the DNA of a manager who's clearly done this for 20 plus years, then you would be on something of a hiding to nothing, because once you abandon your core principles as a manager, I'm not sure what you've got left.
No, there is no option. There's no change. This is how he's arrived as to become the Tottenham Hotspur manager is based on his core principles, of which he can't, at no point, he can't go against these principles that have made him successful. And if he does that, then that's abandoning what he knows. And that is uncharted territory for him.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun: Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
That's like saying,
without a doubt,
and that's risky for him. He's better off, just on in terms of the Ange Postecoglou career path, he's better off losing his job doing what he knows gets him there than abandoning it and it all falling apart, because that shows a lack of principle and conviction in his ability, and he needs to have that as an elite Premier League manager.
I do think as well, it's a nuanced conversation, but it's a point I made when he first came into Spurs. This sort of prevailing view that because he's Australian, because he doesn't have grounding as a manager in a European game, he's sort of worked in the backwaters of football, there's this view that, well, it's one thing doing it with them, it's another coming to the Prem and doing it. I don't necessarily view things that way, because if you look at the way that Arsene Wenger revolutionised Arsenal when he first went in there, it was foreign, it was different, it was strange. And in the end, they've gone 49 unbeaten, you know, won a title. We all know the situation. I'm not going to gild that particular lily on a Tottenham podcast.
Cheers.
But you look at the Mourinho effect at Chelsea. He came in and he was this brash, abrasive character, completely at odds with the status quo in the Premier League, but it worked. Albeit, you can say that Mourinho got immediate success because of the money he had available to him. But my point here is that in both of those cases, they upset the apple cart in terms of their way of being, and it did put noses out of joint, but it doesn't necessarily mean it was the wrong thing to do, and their mark on the English game is permanent and will be forever. So I'm not suggesting Ange Postecoglou is going to go on and achieve what Mourinho or Wenger did in the English game, but this immediate writing off of his career to date purely because it hasn't happened at a fashionable club or league, I just feel as though it feeds into this view that his football is somehow naive, where if he'd had that success with, say, Inter Milan, or if he'd done it with Bayern Munich, then no one would be questioning it. They would be saying that Spurs are the problem rather than Ange Postecoglou being the problem. So for me, you have to give him the opportunity, probably another 12 months to work it out. And if you've still got these defensive frailties, if you're still conceding, you know, counter-attack goals to sit tides in the bottom half at home and dropping points because of it, then you say, look, we gave this a fair crack at a whip. It hasn't worked for us. That doesn't necessarily mean it won't work for someone else. I just feel as though that the view of the mainstream media, and I know that's a broad church, but there's this desire to write him off because of his career path rather than the football that he's actually trying to play.
One of the bugbears at the moment from Spurs fans in the media on a more wider sense is the set piece issue. Like this year we've conceded 14 goals from set pieces. I don't know if you managed to catch the Newcastle game, but they effectively won every single header at every corner. Their man was first to the ball. Against Arsenal, as you probably well know, conceded two to set pieces. Now, this Postecoglou's come out and said, this isn't something that concerns me if we're going to become a successful team, and I'm going to make Tottenham a successful team, but it won't be because we, you know, because of set pieces. It'll be because, I'd imagine what he was saying, the subtext to that is, it'll be because we're a brilliant football team and we won't have to rely on that. There's a couple of things I want to pick up on in that respect. But before that, there was a message from Celtic fans in his first season saying it's all well and good playing this attractive football, but if you concede an 89th minute from a corner that you can't defend again in a game that you completely dominated and it ends 1-1, it's still 1-1. There was an uptick in Celtic's ability to defend corners in the second season, significant uptick, and it was much less of an issue. So was counter-attacking goals. And that pattern hopefully will be repeated at Spurs. But what's been frustrating for some fans is that he's saying there's no issue with the set pieces. It's not something we're going to concentrate on. And that, you can understand the frustration, right? Because it's like, well, just do it. Just do the work. Put the extra
Accept that it's a problem. Yeah, exactly.
Accept that it's a problem and do something. But bring in a set piece coach. You've seen what Arsenal can do at set pieces this season because they've brought someone in who was a specialist from Manchester City. And it's been the efficacy of that decision, the efficacy of the work that's been put in place. Because that guy is there, won them the North London Derby. And just don't say we don't care about set pieces. Just say we're going to work on it. I don't know what he had to gain by being so honest.
I think I said this to you last time I was on. I've certainly said it on my podcast a fair few times in relation to the Roy Hodgson situation at Palace. It shouldn't necessarily be the case, but if you're a Premier League manager in 2024, PR is a huge part of it. It just is. You are the front man of a multinational, multi-million pound company. And with that, it's not like a normal company because you've got the hopes and dreams and expectations of hundreds of thousands of people in the palm of your hand. So when you come out in press conferences, and Postecoglou has had, you know, very, very favourable press ever since he arrived in terms of his sound bites and his quotes in press conferences. But at the same time, that sort of stubbornness that has sort of characterised his whole time in North London, this I'm a Tottenham manager, I don't care about anything else. When you start being so stubborn, but it's about something that the fans genuinely want to see a change with, it can have the opposite impact. You know, you look at Palace, not that Oliver Glasner has said anything about set pieces, but I think literally we have not scored off a corner this season. It's 200 and something corners since we last scored from one. So we get them now, and you just don't expect, you don't even have that buzz of anticipation.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though we're winning games, it's a huge part of football. There's no way around it. You know, you get a goal at a corner, a scruffy in-swinging one that goes in at the far post, it counts the same as a 30-yard screamer. Yeah. So, like you said, even if he's not actually that bothered about it privately, you just have to tick the boxes and say, look, it's something we're working on, it's a part of the game, and we are striving to improve it all the time. And who knows, maybe you will see a tangible difference going into next season. I wouldn't write it off. You know, I think often football clubs, because of the sort of 24-hour nature of the news cycle, you can get a bit bogged down in the here and now. If you go into the new season and all of a sudden that's no longer a problem, you won't necessarily get Spurs fans praising him for it. It will just be seen as par for the course. But as you pointed out, you know, there was a significant uptick with Celtic in the second season. You have to afford him that time to try and do that, I think.
Yeah. Do you think that so it's interesting you said that where previously you saw set pieces as a key opportunity to score. I don't know if you did say that, but you was alluding to it in the fact that you used to have excitement about corners and now you don't. Do you think is it something about how both managers play? I'm not asking you to have a definitive answer on this because it just popped into my head when you were talking there. But if you're a possession-based coach, is it that so much time has gone into, do you think, understanding where you need to be on the position on the pitch and how you create triangles and how you get in the pockets between the lines, that is so much more difficult, and so there isn't an insistence or set pieces are considered to be beneath them or something like that? Is that what we're hearing?
I think maybe with corners specifically, you know, obviously isn't, because you can employ a set piece coach and you can have all of these specific ways of running set pieces, but you could just boil it down to throwing a ball into the 6-yard box and hoping for the best. You know, that in itself is what most fans see from week to week when they see a corner floated in. How many times do you hear supporters say he hasn't even beaten the first man? You know, that is something you get frustrated by.
Everyone says,
if someone throws a corner in and it gets deflected away. But then at the same time, if you do go for the short corner route, then people from a certain style of English football will get frustrated because you're not getting it in the mixer. So I don't know. Like, I look at the way Postecoglou set Spurs up, and I look at the way that we're set up under Glasner. Of course, far more would go into transitions and patterns and overloads rather than the pure mechanism of putting the ball on the penalty spot or on the edge of the 6-yard box. But you would still expect the quality of players that both sides have for the occasional scramble or the occasional second ball to find its way into the back of the net, or in your case, for, you know, the people that do such a good job week on week defending in transition to be able to keep out corners. It's an anomaly that I'm not really sure he will necessarily have an answer to. I think there has probably been quite a lot placed upon the Arsenal set-piece coach making all this difference. You know, I mean, Ben White is someone that has been in the spotlight for the last few days because of his trying to pull off Vicario's gloves. It's just one of those alchemy things, I think, that you can't necessarily suggest is right or wrong. It's just the way that Arsenal have done this season, and you may see it flip completely next term.
Yeah. I mean, you say it's not right or wrong. That's wrong, isn't it? Interfering with a goalkeeper, interfering with another human being when he's just trying to get on with his job. I don't know. You mentioned there's a particular demographic who don't like short corners. You're talking about my dad, by the way.
I think everyone over the age of 60
doesn't like short corners. And you should hear him. Like, I've said this on the Fighting Cock, so people are going to get bored of me hearing this. But whenever we play it out from the back, it's the same thing. You hear to say, get it long. Stop fucking playing out from the back. I'm sick of it. And I was like, explained over and over again the analysis that's gone involved in playing out from the back and why it's so much better than just lumping it long and turning over possession, but he just won't have it. Just doesn't like it, which is his prerogative. You mentioned earlier the comparison is the thief of joy. And I think that any critique that Spurs fans want to aim at Postecoglou is preloaded with a frustration of what's happening at Arsenal.
Without a doubt. It's the same. To be honest, you can make a parallel once again with Palace, right? Because even though we are coming very, very quickly and Brighton are falling apart in front of our eyes, right?
Yeah.
The fact that we lost 3-0 to Brighton in such dramatic fashion sealed Roy Hodgson's fate in pretty much everyone's eyes. I, whether I should or shouldn't have done, tweeted sack him at half time when we were 3-0 down. Because as far as I was concerned, it was the ultimate embarrassment. We hadn't turned up against Brighton, and that in itself does create a little bit more anger and angst when your own team are not performing well and your biggest rivals are. So obviously losing at home to Arsenal was always going to be a huge spanner in the works, and you look at their title push. I still think Manchester City will get over the line, but all of the narratives over the last couple of weeks about whether or not you should be looking to beat Manchester City in that game, or, you know, whether it's right or wrong that Spurs fans don't want Arsenal to win the title, it doesn't really matter what anyone else thinks, because you're Tottenham fans and you will think what you think. And I happen to believe that whether or not it's logical, I am completely on your side. If it took us getting relegated to stop Brighton winning the league, I'd take it. So
yeah, I look, there's no part of me that wants us to win that game. Nothing. And you might not know this, but Spurs are in a very similar situation in, I'd say, 90, maybe 2001.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I can't remember exactly when it was. Arsenal-Manchester United game for the league title, last game of the season. Tottenham are away at Old Trafford, and we go 1-0 up. Les Ferdinand scores this scramble goal. It sort of bounces off his knee and loops into the net. We're terrible, by the way. Awful at this time. And you're like, what are you doing? What are we doing here? Like, what? This means nothing to our season. It will change absolutely nothing in the upward trajectory or downward trajectory, whatever it is. We're so mid-table and so mediocre that any result is fucking irrelevant to our future. And we're beating this all-conquering Manchester United seed 1-0 at our own patch. And Arsenal need this to happen. Throw the ball in the net. Luckily, Man United was so good that they turned it around and won 2-1. But it's a similar situation. It's in this moment, even if, and this will rattle some cages, I'd imagine, but even if Tottenham are in a position where we needed to win and to finish in top four, Champions League football, but it would mean that Arsenal get the league title. No way. Not in a million years.
You said the same when he overlapped, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think Carragher was losing his mind. But well, that's football fandom. Do you know what I mean? I don't really see a problem with it, personally. You know, I do worry, from your point of view here, that Ange Postecoglou is not going to buy into that narrative.
Absolutely not.
He will go there to murder Man City. Because as far as he's concerned, that's just football, mate. Do you know what I mean? That's what he will say. What am I supposed to do? Go out there and not try and win a game?
No, as a manager,
you're
right.
And of course, from a professional integrity perspective, again, you have to do that. But I don't know. It's such a strange dynamic, because the rivalry and hatred between Arsenal and Spurs is so fierce that if you were to hand them the title on a silver platter, they would just lord it over you for the rest of your days.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that you would come back from that emotionally.
Yeah, I know, it would be a tough one. I've dealt with a lot through the years because of them, but that would be another bitter pill to swallow. And what would we have? 3 points over Man City. Yeah. I mean, it's not like we can't beat Man City. We're beating them regularly. So it would mean nothing. It would be a weird atmosphere, and it will be a weird atmosphere at White Hart Lane when they come. And it no doubt will have a bearing on the league, because you can only see both teams just keep winning. Yeah, it'd be an interesting one. But if Manchester City do beat us and clinch the title, the rush in the pitch will be insane. You'll have City fans and Spurs fans on there at the same time.
You'd be inviting them on.
Come on, they'll celebrate. Doing the Poznan, the whole stadium doing the Poznan. before I let you go, Dan, I just want to get your take on the North London derby, because, well, I just want to get your take for emotionally, without emotion, because this is my perspective, and you can tell me if I'm wrong. We didn't deserve to be 3-0 down. We were a better team in the first half. We managed to turn over the ball in their half consistently. We made them, I wouldn't say rattled, but unsettled on the ball, which is rare for them. And if we'd have taken our chances in terms of Son, Romero hitting the bar, his header wide, and Van de Ven's goal, when he had like half an arse cheek just behind him that kept him on, kept him off. If that had happened, and the way the second half went, that it could have been a different game. But overall, in the balance of play, there wasn't much between Tottenham and Arsenal. I'm not, being not super at all, no. kind to Spurs, I think. I want to get your take.
No, I agree with you. I think the Van de Ven goal, timing-wise, momentum-wise, if, as you say, the other half of his arse had been onside, you potentially go on and win that game and lord it over them with two or three goals in the second half. I do genuinely believe that. But, of course, you're always going to get people saying, oh, well, if, could, whatever. Mm. And that is, you know, the Arsenal perspective here because, again, we're on a Tottenham podcast. I don't want to wax lyrical about them, but they've come through a number of difficult tests this season, and I think that is a mark of the progress they've made because, you know, they may not have won at Manchester City, but they didn't face defeat. They're still in this title race, and whether or not their goals were scrappy, they've got the job done. But the fact is that you did put them under pressure late on. I don't think anyone saw you coming back and getting as close as you did to salvaging a point from that game. Of course, it counts for nothing on the table in terms of tangible points, but overall, quite clearly, the method that Ange Postecoglou is working to, the style of play, and to be honest, the general points tally and feel of the football club as a whole is surely a positive compared to where you thought you would be with a new manager who was untested in Europe, without Harry Kane, with the protest against Daniel Levy, all of that at the start of the season. I think if you try and zoom out, he has actually steadied the ship and improved you in a number of ways. It's just a case of taking that bitter pill with a North London derby defeat and the loss of potential Champions League football to Aston Villa and trying to go into next season, wipe the slate clean and go again, hopefully with some of those kinks worked out.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you so much. If people are still listening, and I hope you will be, you can find Dan's stuff, his Twitter account on HLTC. I'm sure you already know this already, but you also do a daily, if I remember rightly, a daily football podcast, is that correct, on your Patreon?
Yeah, a daily football podcast on everything in the Premier League, the EFL and across Europe, Monday to Friday, every single morning by 8:30, as well as a Palace one Monday to Friday, every day by 8:30 as well. Not that people would necessarily want to listen to that from a Spurs point of view, yeah. But I'm just letting you know that it's there. And there's a YouTube channel as well, which I sort of relaunched this week, having moved into a proper office rather than the makeshift one that was my loft.
Are you looking forward to the end of the season? I know you love football. I think, Dan, you might love football more than anyone else I've ever met, including James Alcott. But are you looking forward to the end of a little break? Or are you just loving football?
I get this a lot. People give me stick, right? I love England. I live and breathe it for the time that the tournament is on. But when we lost the European Championship final, I was pissed off for about 12 hours.
Right. Yeah, same.
We lost the FA Cup final in 2016. I still think about it every week. So, you know, people talk to me about, oh yeah, but you'll be there with your flag on the car in the Euro. I won't be. Like, I will be there. I'm not painting my face. I want us to win. I want us to enjoy the summer and have a great time. But this narrative of, oh, you get to celebrate with people that you don't normally celebrate. I don't want to celebrate with Chelsea fans. I couldn't give a fuck. Mate, like, they're not my people.
They're
not my people. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I actually almost get more annoyed when someone who every week is going to me, fucking Palace, and if they suddenly want to give me a giant hug because Declan Rice has scored one at the near post, I'm like, okay, but let's go back to normal, please. Do you know what I mean?
So, I'm
looking forward, but at the same time, you know, football for me is the domestic season.
Yeah, fair play. I have something similar in that when England go out, I'm like, well, at least Arsenal fans are hurting right now. That's how I reconcile it. All right, I'm sort of feel all right about it. I'm not bothered that much, but there are definitely Arsenal fans that are hurting right now. Anyway, cheers, Dan.
No worries, mate.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.